Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, November 29, 2023. President Salva Kiir challenged governors of the country's 10 states and three administrative areas to implement the 2018 peace agreement.
You are supposed to work as colleagues regardless of your political or personal differences.
And a deputy director at the South Sudan's Refugee Commission says the country was not ready to receive refugees from Sudan.
There are challenges in the refugee camp in Gorom, and not only in Gorom, but it is all over South Sudan where the refugees are.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir told state governors Tuesday to implement the 2018 peace deal and run their states according to the country's constitution and law. UN Secretary General's Special Representative in South Sudan says state governors should use the ongoing forum to consolidate peace and stability in the country. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
President Salva Kiir made the remarks Tuesday at the annual governors' forum, which brought together 10 state governors and chief administrators of three administrative areas. Kiir told the state governors and chief administrators to follow the provisions of the 2018 peace deal as they run their respective states and administrative areas.
You are supposed to work as colleagues regardless of your political or personal differences. I will direct the high-level standing committee for the implementation of the agreement to set up a mechanism for the resolution of disputes so that we move forward together as partners in the implementation of the agreement and we move smoothly towards elections by December 2024.
Mr. Kiir stressed that the 2018 peace deal is the only way to build a strong foundation for a stable and democratic South Sudan. He says good governance could result into socio-economic recovery and prosperity for the people of South Sudan.
There is no need to engage in activities that will destroy our country and harm our people. We are establishing South Sudan as a democratic country. Anybody who wants to become a president has the right to organize their party and contest peacefully without violence.
The president says he is concerned about the way some of the governors are running their states.
I am reliably informed that some of you do not govern your states according to the constitution and the law. Apparently, some of you do not hold cabinet meetings. There are conflicts between the executive and the state assemblies, which makes the state unstable.
President assumed the chairmanship of the East African Community last week. He calls on state governors to ensure that peace prevails across the country to make his leadership of the regional bloc a success. The governor of Central Equatoria State says he believes the governors' forum will help governors reconsider their obligation to address the challenges facing South Sudanese. Governor Emmanuel Adil Anthony says state governors and the administrators of the three areas, Greater Pibor, Abyei, and Ruweng, are responsible for providing services to the people of South Sudan.
We have an obligation in this forum to renew our commitment to deliver the prerequisite of lasting peace, security, and economic stabilization. This particular governance forum will signify a shift from our past to end the year 2023 and mark it as the year of the dawn of hope for lasting peace.
Speaking at the same event, Nicholas Asom, UN Special Representative of the Secretary General and head of the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, calls on governors to use the forum to consolidate peace and stability in South Sudan.
One must hope that this week's forum will offer a platform for problem solving on the challenges that you face before you as a nation as you enter your final year of your transition. We think it's important to take advantage of your collective presence here in Juba to discuss a united approach on the consolidation of peace and stability in the remaining transitional period.
The annual Governors Forum is organized by the Office of the President with support from United Nations Development Programme, or UNDP. The forum is the highest policy platform that brings together governors to discuss policy issues around governance and democratic principles. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Still in Juba, the Embassy of the United States in Juba says it is concerned about renewed fighting in Lehr County of Unity State. An official with the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission says the displaced civilians are in need of food and shelter. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, Michael J. Adler, says the United States Embassy is concerned about reports of renewed fighting in Unity State. Fighting broke out in Kaigai Payam of Lehr County in Unity State Tuesday between SPLA-IO forces loyal to First Vice President Riek Machar and former rebels loyal to Lieutenant General Simon Magwek Guy, who defected to the South Sudan Army early last month. In an audio statement shared by the U.S. Embassy, Ambassador Adler called on the leaders in South Sudan to stop the fighting.
We are particularly concerned about reports of casualties and displacement of civilians. We call on the transitional government to act with urgency to end the violence. All those in positions of authority and influence in South Sudan must commit to resolving differences through peaceful dialogue.
Ambassador Adler notes that there is a history of human rights violations and extrajudicial killings in Unity State. In April last year, President Salva Kiir appointed a committee to investigate the violence which broke out in Lehr County in Unity State. The committee was tasked to investigate the causes of insecurity in Lehr County and propose measures to prevent further violence in future. The committee was directed on April 13, 2022, to produce its report within 2 weeks. Ambassador Adler calls on the government to make the report public.
We renew our call on the transitional government to release the long-delayed findings of the investigation into the April 2022 violence in Lehr County. The perpetrators must be held accountable.
There are no details of casualties from Tuesday's fighting at the moment, but Lehr County authorities say they believe some people were killed and injured on both sides. In an email response to VOA's request for comment, the French medical charity Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, in Lehr County wrote, quote, "On 28 November, MSF teams received 4 patients with gunshot wounds in our medical facility in Lehr. 3 patients were provided emergency medical care in the facility, while 1 critically injured patient was transferred for further specialized care. We continue to monitor the situation, and our teams are providing regular services in the medical facility," end quote. Paulino Queth, the director of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Lehr County, says thousands of civilians fled to 2 areas for safety during yesterday's fighting.
Those who went home, we estimate there are about 24,000 households. And those who came later on, they were about 11,000 households. The situation today is normal, so even now we want to have a meeting, security update to all humanitarian actors in Lehr County. Till morning up now, we are still to hear any gunshots.
Queth says the displaced civilians are sleeping in open spaces in Lehr.
The second need is shelter, because you know that the people, they are under a tree now. There's no place. The sun is too much for them. the people that are outside, so they are separating about because the people, they are gathering under some tree in the quarter, even in Moon.
Kweth is urging international aid agencies to intervene and provide humanitarian support to the displaced. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Sudan, where Sudanese women of various backgrounds recently gathered in Nairobi to discuss the brutal war that has ravaged the country the past 7 months. With no end in sight, they feel their voices have been silenced and they yearn to contribute to resolving the conflict that has killed thousands and displaced millions since April 15. VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo was there and has this report.
Women in Sudan were a big part of a revolution that helped end 3 decades of autocratic rule by former Sudanese president Omar al-Bashir. Their push for a transition to a civilian government was cut short when war broke out 7 years ago between the Sudanese army and the Rapid Support Forces paramilitary unit. Thousands are dead, millions are displaced, and there is no end in sight.
Since April 15, voices of civilians and voices of women has been completely, I would say, sabotaged. We didn't have a space to tell our story or to speak about our suffering.
Hala Al-Kharib is with the Strategic Initiative for Women in the Horn of Africa. She says her organization convened a 2-day summit in Nairobi because it's important to bring Sudanese women and civil society groups together.
We have participants who came from conflict zone and they have endured living under fire, enduring and, you know, exposed to all kinds of violence for the past 7 months. It's really critical to listen to their stories, to listen to their experience, and to listen to their positions and views.
Some participants spent 3 to 10 days on the road to reach Nairobi, including Nidal Usman Musa, who runs the South Khartoum Kandakat grassroots organization.
We have faced much obstacles, displacement, refugees, rape, violence. We missed our job. Our children missed their education, and also we missed our voice in this war.
Alawiya Bahr el-Din, a former social worker, now a refugee in neighboring Chad, had to leave her home of El Janina in West Darfur, where about 700 people were reportedly killed earlier this month after clashes between SAF and the RSF, according to the International Organization for Migration.
This is so difficult. The situation there is so difficult for women, believe me.
The fighting in Sudan has made it hard to reach certain areas, says Nadal Fadul, who's with SUDRO, the Sustainable Development Response Organization. She's based in the United States. Fadul says it's imperative the women unite toward peace and how to sustain it so the reality on the ground doesn't happen again.
So we're talking about people with diabetes, for example, not able to get insulin to treat their diabetes. We're talking about kids with malaria not able to get anti-malaria treatments. We're talking about women not able to get simple menstrual hygiene products to be able to go through that with dignity.
Others participating in the conference as a show of support included the Netherlands chargé d'affaires to Sudan, Burish Ramsuk, now living in Nairobi, who said the challenge for these women is to develop a political strategy for getting a seat at the negotiating table.
There's an extra hurdle for women to be taken, and that is not only to formulate their vision, what they want for women in Sudan, but also to be heard. And I like the spirit this morning where it was said, you do not wait until you get invited, you just go, you take it.
Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, do you know what it means to be a refugee in South Sudan? Stay tuned for an answer to that question after the break.
What do you think? people speak out on important questions. The question today:
what would you most likely to accomplish in life, and how close are you to achieving it?
My dream is to be one of the best filmmakers in Uganda and maybe in the world at large. With time and what I've done so far to achieve that, yes, I know I'm still very far, but I've written some scripts already.
To me, as a software developer, I still have a long way, but hopefully, God, I'll be able to make it.
I want to be a voice for the people who I need and help people generally wherever I find myself. And I think that studying to become a lawyer is in the right direction to achieving that.
I would like to be a very, very great musician, a composer. For now, I'm not close there, but I'm working to get to the level I can actually achieve that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Most of the Sudanese refugees who crossed into South Sudan say they are living in deplorable conditions. Deputy Director for Protection at the South Sudan Refugee Commission says the government of South Sudan was not prepared to receive thousands of Sudanese fleeing the conflict in Sudan. Daniel Chagai says the government of South Sudan is working with its partners to provide services to thousands of Sudanese refugees fleeing the conflict. I interviewed Chagai while I was in Juba at Goram refugee camp.
There are challenges in the refugee camp in Goram, and not only in Goram, but it is all over South Sudan where the refugees are. Like, we have the Sudanese in Widwill, in Awil, northern Barkazal, and we have also refugees in Maban, and refugees in Yambio and Yei, and we have urban refugees in Juba. So the situation of the refugees, we know the things are not enough. For example, the food that is given to them by WFP is not enough, and other partners who are coming here to support, they just want to fill the gap, but still the gap is huge. Because when the emergency, when the war started in Sudan, we were not aware that we will receive many refugees from Sudan, and also our refugees, returnees who came from Sudan. So there are a lot of things that are not in place. The water is not enough, but we are trying our best with the partners to fix these things. The only thing that we cannot be will be fixed now is the issue of food, because WFP worldwide, they cut ratio 50%. And so 50%, which is given to the refugees, is not enough. But they have to bear with us, because there are other partners who are interested to come and fill the gap. We have now a number of them who are coming to do one, two, or three to support the refugees.
Yes, Mr. Daniel, how many Sudanese refugees, or how many refugees are here in Goram, refugee settlement camp?
We have almost 11,000 because we have Sudanese, they are around 8,000 plus. And then we have the Anuak and other nationalities here amount to 5,000.
But the Anuak, my understanding is Sudanese, South Sudanese. Why would they be refugees here?
No, they are not. They are not, because these people, they came from Ethiopia. In Gambela.
So you mean the Anuak?
The Anuak from, yes, okay. Anuak from Ethiopia.
Okay.
They came long time ago, and in fact, this camp was established for them. And they were about 3,000 when we established this camp. And so now they have been here for almost 10 plus years. Well, they are here in Goram. And yes, they are under the protection of the government of South Sudan.
Your role in the commission, the refugee commission, is to provide a conducive environment for refugees to settle.
Exactly.
And other agencies come in to help with health, food, and education. Talk to me about the educational sector. One refugee was telling me that there are no schools here. There's one school, not enough for everybody.
The role of the Commission for Refugee Affairs, we are mandated by the government of the Republic of South Sudan to oversee and give the protection to the refugees. But also we talk to the host communities to provide land to the refugees, and also to provide the protection. In the case of education, yes, there was only one primary school here and one secondary school. And this was meant for the Anuak who are here And you know, the number was 3,000 of the population. And so maybe the children were not at that big number, plus the host community. So when the Sudanese came in April, now the number of the student or the people increased. So now partners, UNHCR and other partners across, they are working on that. There is a building going on now. We are building this secondary school. And this issue of primary school, because we are aware as a government, these people cannot fit in that school. And so there is a lot of things that are being done now, between now and maybe before the end of the year, the beginning of January, things may be different from now. But now, the issue of school, there is no space. And this is something that is actually noted by the government.
And how about healthcare? How many hospitals are here for this 9,000 refugees?
Yes, it is a challenge also. We have only one healthcare, one hospital. It's a clinic, by the way, but it's managed by Across and then UNHCR. So it is a challenge. As I told you, this emergency, when the Sudanese came, they just came unexpected. And the majority of them, they came to Juba. And then we told them that if you come to Juba, this is urban, so you cannot be helped here, you cannot get assistance, so you better go to Gorum. So they came here. So the hospital is not enough. There are a lot of things. But now what we do, they across the team of doctors here this year, UNHCR increased the doctors and even the nurses, but there is always referral. If there are cases, they are referred to Juba Teaching Hospital because Juba is near, just only 25 kilometers away. So we know that there is a challenge on the health care.
That's Daniel Chagai, Deputy Director for Protection at the South Sudan Refugee Commission. He spoke with me in Juba at Gorum Refugee Camp earlier this month. We'll bring you more voices of refugees from Gorum Refugee Camp on our shows for Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday. The United Nations Relief and Works Agency says it welcomes the temporary ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Abdul Bolbokos, the director of the UNRWA Affairs in West Bank, says conditions of 1.1 million internally displaced persons in facilities in Gaza are tragic. One toilet for about 150 people and one shower for about 700 people. Bolokos told my colleague James Barty that while the temporary ceasefire has made possible delivery of some fuel, what the agency needs is the unfettered delivery of humanitarian aid.
The ceasefire is a welcome initiative, and we're very pleased about it because it's helping to alleviate the suffering of the people in Gaza. And we're estimating now, and it's hard to get the exact figures, but something like 1.8 million people have been displaced in Gaza since the start of the war. So the ceasefire, at a minimum, allows us to move around the Gaza Strip, particularly to the north. There is an Israeli kind of checkpoint north of Wadi Gaza that we have to kind of navigate our way through.
You said that ceasefire has allowed you to travel and see the level of destruction. How would you describe the overall humanitarian conditions in the area now that the ceasefire has allowed some delivery of trucks to enter Gaza?
Yeah, well, you know, I've been in this humanitarian business for almost 30 years, and the level of destruction that we're seeing in Gaza is unlike anything that many of us have, many humanitarian development professionals in UNRWA. Again, because it's such a small area, so densely populated, the bombardment has been massive. You know, the Israeli military is a very sophisticated, modern military that is, leveling Gaza, huge levels of destruction, which is why we've seen, you know, the 1.8 million people displaced. We have something like over 1 million internally displaced people, about 1.1 million internally displaced Gazans who are in our facilities in 156 shelters. Those are schools, health centers, other buildings. people are trying to seek refuge wherever they can. In these shelters, we've got something like, let's say, one toilet for about 150 people, one shower when there's water for about 700 people. Most people are wearing the same clothes that they had on the 7th of October. The limited fuel, limited flour and food and other foodstuffs is a huge challenge. So, you know, the conditions are absolutely tragic. And the number of people killed is also just enormous, many of whom are children. The injuries to people, the hospitals that don't have supplies, you know, doctors that are performing amputation procedures without any anesthetic. I mean, it's tragic. It's unlike anything that many of us have seen in our professional careers.
We've been reading that the temporary ceasefire has allowed delivery trucks to come into Gaza. What does this do now to the all-important fuel that your agency has talked about? Are you getting the fuel you need?
Yes, well, the primary needs now remain fuel and flour. Because the fuel is so important for running desalination plants, for our logistics operation of moving vehicles around the strip, loading and unloading, you know, all of the heavy equipment that's necessary.
That's Adam Balokos, director of the United Nations Relief and Works Agency Affairs in West Gaza. He spoke with James Batty earlier today. U.S. lawmakers are racing to reach a deal on millions of dollars in aid to Ukraine and Israel before the holiday break. U.S. congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
As snow blankets Ukraine and Ukrainian troops brace for another hard winter of fighting, aid crucial to Ukraine's fight against Russian aggression is in jeopardy in the U.S. Congress. Chuck Schumer is the majority leader in the U.S. Senate.
For weeks, long weeks, a handful of Republicans have dangerously tried to link Ukraine aid and make our support for democracy in the West a pivotal issue that history will remember us for, conditional on passing hard right border policies.
The White House has requested $106 billion in national security funding, including $60 billion for Ukraine and nearly $14 billion in aid for Israel. While most Senate Republicans support that aid, they are asking for billions in funding for border security in return. Mitch McConnell is the top Republican in the U.S. Senate.
I called the president last week to make sure he understood that there wouldn't be a bill without a credible effort to get on top of our disastrous southern border situation. I hope that made the point, because I think on our side, I've been the most enthusiastic supporter of the underlying bill.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said passage of the aid package in the U.S. Congress is one of three key victories Ukraine needs on the international front. Zelensky said, "It's a challenge. It's not easy." But U.S. lawmakers have only a few weeks left in the session before heading home for the holidays. And the White House says the aid already distributed to Ukraine is running dangerously low. National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby.
We didn't just pull those figures out of thin air. It was very much in keeping with what our partners have told us they need for the coming months. And in both cases, the runway keeps getting shorter and shorter.
Many Republicans have expressed concern about continued aid while there are many pressing domestic needs. One analyst told VOA the debate over Ukraine aid can't be separated from domestic political concerns. Colin Cleary is an adjunct professor at George Washington University and a veteran of the Foreign Service who served in Ukraine.
Some of the critics of Ukraine aid would say, well, Ukraine is important, or Ukraine's in trouble, but we have a lot of domestic needs. We have poverty, we have border issues, we have other national issues, and so we should be spending the money on that. And I think that's a false dichotomy. A great country can do two things, or more than two things, at the same time.
Opposition to aid to Ukraine is more significant in the Republican-majority U.S. House of Representatives. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, November 29, 2023. We now leave you with a remix of the song Balumba by Baby Philip, featuring Eddie Kenzo. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bill Bass, we wish you a lovely evening and remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.